Good morning. It is January 4th, 2020. That's right, a brand new year, brand new decade. You are listening to All Out Law. I'm your host, Attorney Kyle Wyatt, Wyatt Law Associates and Freedom Traffic Law. Located at 210 West Sunshine, Suite H, Springfield Mo, right across the street from the Bass Pro Shop. In the same shopping complex as McAllister's, open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, handling all your family law and traffic law needs. Hope everyone had a happy and safe New Year's. A buddy of mine does a lot of Uber driving and listens to the police scanner. So there was a lot of DWIs or possible DWIs, people getting pulled over throughout the night. You know, you always got to be careful on those. But if you never had one before, a little quick info. And DWIs, it's drive while intoxicated. And if you go through the, fill sobriety test, take it back to the station, have to blow into the BAC machine, they'll pop out a number stating this is what your blood alcohol content is. If it's over 0.08 or more, you are charged with driving while intoxicated. And so what happens is that they'll take your driver's license. They will keep it and send it off to Jefferson City, Missouri Department of Revenue. And then they will hand you a little white sheet of paper, a little single sheet, and it will be a 15-day driving permit. All right, so if you got this on New Year's Eve, and most likely you got pulled over on New Year's Day, January 1, you're 4 days in. All right, so you got till January 15th to get something going. And what you would need to be doing is consult an attorney. Yeah, DWIs is one of those traffic charges. That's what it is. It's a traffic charge. You know, people put a lot more stigma on a DWI. Not to say it's good. Don't read me wrong. I'm not saying it's good. But I like to put things in perspective. All right. Driving without a license. You know, let's say your license got suspended because of points or for whatever reason. There's a whole host of reasons why your license could get suspended. Is a worse crime than a first-time DWI. Can you believe that? There's a whole host of things that is worse than a first-time DWI. Getting caught with marijuana paraphernalia, right? Just having a bowl or a pipe is a worse crime than driving on our roadways intoxicated on your first offense. So just kind of keep it in perspective. So you get your traffic ticket. It's a DWI. And they hand you this 15-day driving permit. And what you would need to be doing is contacting an attorney. That's obviously something that we do. And what we do when we meet, you know, we first figure out why did you get pulled over in the first place. Because you can't just get, you know, law enforcement is not allowed to just pull you over just because. All right. They have to have what the law calls is probable cause, right? That a crime has been committed. Typically, and in DWIs, the things that I find is that you broke some sort of traffic law, meaning weaving inside your lane, crossing the fog line. That's that little white line to the right of your car on the roadway. Not having a light on your license plate. How many of you go out and check that at night, making sure your license plate light is illuminated? Not many. Failing to stop. Just any host of things. Speeding. Right? So any host of reasons an officer can come up with for pulling you over. And I always tell my clients, and I tell you, you know, if you're out driving after midnight, and that, it doesn't matter if it's New Year's Eve or what, you know, Arbor Day, it doesn't matter. High probability that something may be going wrong. You may have done something wrong. And so law enforcement officers are wise to that. And your grandmother will tell you nothing good happens after midnight. Well, it's true. And so they just wait and see what you do. All of us violate the law every day, probably, when we're driving. You don't mean to. It's just human nature. And so law enforcement just keeps their eyes open and see if they have some reason to pull you over. And then when they do and they make contact, they smell a strong odor of intoxicants coming from your person, right? If you're drinking beer, that's definitely going to be a telltale sign, right? Eyes are glassy, watery, slurred speech. You know, one of the interesting things is one of the training techniques that law enforcement has is that they're trained to watch when they ask you for your license and insurance, right? To see the smoothness of your ability to pull your wallet out of your pocket or out of your purse, to see if there's any fumbling of those documents to law enforcement. When they ask you to step out of the car to see how fluid you are, or you having to have to hold on to the car to stand up, you know, just any host of reasons. But if you failed all those things and find yourself with a shiny new ticket, that 15-day driving permit needs not to be avoided or ignored, because what we do is once we meet with you, find out if there was any arguments on why you should not have been stopped. And most of the time, law enforcement does a pretty good job. You know, majority of the time, cops have legitimate reasons why to pull you over. And thankfully, a lot of times we have what is called dash cams that we can request a copy of it and view it and see for ourselves. You know, what did the officer see that led him to pulling you over? And when we do that, if we pass that, then what we need to do is turn in that white sheet of paper to the Department of Revenue. There's two aspects to a DWI. Neither aspect has one thing to do with the other. Nothing. You could win an administrative hearing and not lose your license and yet still be convicted of a DWI, or vice versa. You could win on the DWI and lose on the administrative hearing and lose your license for 90 days. Both of those things can happen. But you'll never have a chance to keep your license if you do not turn in that white sheet of paper requesting an administrative hearing. And so what the attorney does is we fill out the bottom part of that little notice that you get, and we request a hearing to determine whether or not your license should be taken. At a minimum, well, what that does is it'll allow you to keep driving until we have that hearing. All right, so they'll send you a new sheet of paper. That'll be your temporary driver's license for a period of time. And then attorneys, there's two ways they do a hearing. You can either do a hearing through phone or you can do one in person. Each attorney has their own way of doing things, so their own way they prefer to handle things. Whether in person or over the phone. I think it's important to, you know, just kind of look at how the facts are in any particular case before you start expending resources that may not be necessary. I've won hearings just over the phone, so I don't know if there's necessarily anything magical with the in-person hearing outside of you can call witnesses if you feel so inclined to do. But we got to take our first break of the hour. You are listening to All Out Law. If you got any questions or comments, feel free to give us a call here in studio at 447-5743. That's 447-5743. All right, welcome back. You are listening to AOL. You know, it's always fun to have a good time, right? Party, celebrate. But sometimes you misjudge the amount of alcohol you have consumed, and you feel all right. You feel pretty straight. You can walk without falling over yourself. But unfortunately, the law does not agree. You know, it's fascinating how the acceptable amounts of alcohol in your system has changed over the years. One time it was 1.5, then 1.0, and now it's 0.08, and there's some talk about you making it even lower than that. I mean, at some point, you might as well just have bring back prohibition and outlaw all this stuff, because you're just not going to be able to leave your house. Or if you do, you're going to have to spend money on Uber, Lyft, taxis, whatever. Yeah, I guess it's good for some business, but just kind of a hassle in others. But if you plan your night right, yeah, you can do things, have a good time still. But we were talking about the process. I mean, that's what a lot of times people don't know, is just the process of DWIs. What all is involved? I have folks who get those and they eventually get their court date. Little tip, whatever court date is on your ticket for a DWI, especially if it's in the state court here in Greene County, that will most likely not be your court date. Officers are given a date to put on their citations when they begin their shift, and that is just but the courts are not hell-bound to it because it takes a prosecutor to actually file a charge. A citation is just basically an investigation from the officers that they submit it to the prosecutor. Says we believe a crime was committed. Here's my report. Here's the citation I gave to the suspect, and then it's up to the prosecutor to review the file and see if a charge should be filed. And I can tell you that Greene County is backed up. Like most large counties, you have hundreds, if not thousands, of citations written every day. And you can imagine the kind of backlog there is. Typically, I tell my clients that don't be surprised if your first court appearance on a DWI doesn't take place for 4 to 6 months after it happened. Okay? So there's things you should be doing prior to that court date, because if you remember prior to us going to the break, I said there's two aspects to a DWI. One has absolutely nothing to do with the other, right? So the administrative side, which is controlled by the Missouri Department of Revenue, right? When you pay your taxes, to get your licenses renewed, right? Get new tags on your vehicle. You got to write that check to Missouri Department of Revenue. And they're the ones who are in charge of whether or not you're going to be able to drive. Because you have to remember now that driving is a privilege, not a right. And so we request a hearing. As an attorney, we file them. And so it usually takes place about 30 to 45 days after we submit it. And again, depending on how your attorney operates, your services may be required. Your services might not be required. Basically, what an attorney is doing in an administrative hearing is just trying to find if there was any mistake made. Was policy procedures being followed? A lot of times what I would look for is to see if when the BAC machine has been calibrated, is it up to date? Is the person who was operating the BAC machine qualified to do it? Did he have proper certification to operate the machine? Was the solution inside the machine properly regulated at the right temperature? Which even then, you know, I have a problem with. And I have a problem with the BAC machines, and I think it's an argument that's been made many times in courts. But I think it's true. You have a solution inside the BAC machine that they use, set at a particular temperature, and in that it's supposed to, you know, mimic whatever the human body is. Well, Sarah and I's body temperature is probably different. My wife and I's body temperature is different. Right, what our normal temperatures are varies from person to person, and so I think that's a variant that needs to be looked at. If you're gonna possibly cause somebody to lose their liberties, right, to lose their privilege to drive, I think you should be somewhat accurate. I think that's a minimum of what you should do, especially if you're at that, you know, if you test positive at like 0.08. My God, could you imagine what kind of variation or variance there could be that could affect that? But I must go on because but nobody cares on that, at least in the eyes of the judges or prosecutors. And so, once we have the hearing, and let's say that and the person who conducts the hearing is an employee of the Missouri Department of Revenue, as an attorney, hearing officer. And they will conduct it, and see if the Department of Revenue's regulations were adhered to correctly. And again, like I said, 99% of the time, it is. It's not easy to win those things. I've won a few of them, but usually, but always, there's some sort of technicality. Hell, I had one time we won just because the it was a country cop, some small town out here, failed to turn in any paperwork after months. So I just said, screw it. We're going to give your guy his license back. You know, case dismissed. But any other host of reasons. And so, but let's say you're one of the 99%, and your license is then now suspended. All right. The suspension lasts for 90 days on a first-time offense. All right. Meaning that after 90 days, and only after 90 days, can you get your license back, right? Get all the full privileges that you were accustomed to. The first 30 days of that 90-day suspension is what they call, or, you know, classified as like a hard walk. All right, you're not supposed to drive whatsoever. There's no excuses. So 30 days, that's a long time. You know, especially if you guys live out there in the rural areas. You have no other means, no other way of getting to work. That's problematic. It's very problematic. And then the last 60 days, you're entitled to receive what's called a limited driving privilege. Now, I will tell you this, that you could request early on, when you get that white sheet of paper, they'll have a spot on there where you can request an immediate limited driving privilege. All right, immediate. However, what you would have to have on your vehicle is one of those ignition airlocks on your car. You know that little tube you got to blow into periodically while you're driving to start the car, to keep the car driving. And that can't not be anything but embarrassing. And so I just don't know the wisdom of necessarily having one of those on. I wouldn't, me personally, do that. I'll just wait. I can wait 30 days. Because when you get the limited driving privilege after your first 30 days, you don't have an ignition or lock on there. They'll give you a sheet of paper. It'll be your limited driving privilege. But you're limited, all right? You don't get just to drive around, go see Christmas lights, go to Bagwell Lights or anything like that. No, you can only go to work, school, your SATOP class. We'll get to that. But it's very limited. And you got to do that for the next 60 days. On the 91st day, you can get your license back. But you can only get your license back if you have done three things. All right. The first thing is what I just referenced, SATOP. SATOPS is a Substance Abuse Traffic Offender Program. I stumble over myself. Substance Abuse Traffic Offender Program. SATOP. It's not cheap, folks. It's not cheap. And I think the price of it is regulated across the state. So much like getting your car inspected, there's no huge variance in that. But it's something that is required for you to take. And it's broken up into two parts. One is the exam, all right, where they figure out where you should be. So they evaluate you. Okay. That's really the most expensive part of the whole thing. Close to $400, folks. Close to $400 to do that evaluation. The class itself, depending on what you have, I think the lowest class, lowest level class, is like $125. So again, it's not cheap, but it's required. If you do not complete SATOP, you will not get your license back. Period. No exceptions. And you can find where locations that are offering SATOP online. You can go to Google and SATOP Springfield, and you'll get a few names popped out. Then the other two things you'll have to do is pay your $45 reinstatement fee and have an SR-22 automobile insurance. SR-22 insurance is just high liability. You can talk to your insurance agent and just say SR-22, and they'll know exactly what you're needing. But I do tell folks to be smart about it because the big boys, they can afford to charge you a lot. They can. And you got to have the SR-22 insurance for 2 years, so you might as well try to find the best price out there since you got to carry it for the next 2 years. We got Jerry from Ozark on line one. Jerry, how you doing this morning?
Yeah, pretty good. I got a question on the real ID for a woman. My wife was married in Guadalajara, Mexico in 1960. Then we married in 1978. She doesn't have a marriage certificate, and we can't really get one. We've tried, but can't get it.
A marriage certificate from her first marriage?
Yeah, yeah.
Why does she need that?
Well, every time your name changes, they want to know why.
Oh.
And her name changed from her maiden name to her married name. And then when we married, it changed from her married name to a new married name.
Sure.
And they want to track that.
How about that?
So how do I
So I guess the good people at Guadalajara doesn't keep track of those things?
Yeah, he said a fire in the church or something.
No. And so those things aren't filed with the city government?
No, in Mexico, you either have a civil marriage or a church wedding, so they're separate.
Oh, my
unlike
God.
Here.
Well, brother, I don't know about that. You know, I don't know how that would work out. Church fire, they have no other way of keeping records. There's no other copies out there. She may have had one, but lost it. Is that right?
Yeah, in the ensuing time, yeah, 50-some years.
So. Well, good God. So what's their plan? You just say, sorry, you don't get to have an ID?
You don't get to have a real ID, so you can't go on an airplane.
Oh, my Lord. Well, brother, you have educated me. I did not know that. They want proof of every time. And so the government of Guadalajara, they're the local municipalities, you don't have, like, you know, when you get married here, obviously, Jerry, you had to go to the courthouse and get a license, right?
Right.
Yeah. And then, there's no such requirement here. I don't know. I mean, I guess the question is, what year did you all get married?
78.
78. And that was here in the United States?
The marriage license in 78 showed her current name.
Her former married name, right?
From her current name to her present name. And so they, you know, and her Social Security number has been the same this whole time. So, you know, you can always tell a story, but if someone tracked your Social Security number, they see a name change, and then they come after you for lying on a federal document or something.
Good God. Well, I don't know what other options you have if you're not able to produce the evidence that they're required, because like you said, if you're and it is true, Jerry, you're absolutely right. The law, I think, we have till October of this year, right? Missouri residents,
right.
Have that real ID, or you're not gonna be able to fly or enter military bases or stuff like that, right?
Right.
I don't know.
I tried to get her a free pass, and they did the same thing. Well, a free pass, no big deal, you know. But not being able to fly at all is a big deal.
Absolutely. I don't know. You may check with an immigration attorney. I don't know what help they could possibly give you. Outside of if it was possible for the government out there to create a new license, or not a new one, but, you know, a replicant of what she would have had back in the 60s. I don't know. I mean, was there any newspaper clippings, anything like that, announcing the marriage, any other kind of physical evidence that you would have had?
No, because, I mean, her husband died, so he isn't even around to say, yeah, we were married. You
All
know?
Right. Well, what about, were they married when he died?
No.
All right. Well, there goes that idea, because I was thinking of the death certificate would announce that probably, but go ahead.
Yeah, it only has his name on it.
All right.
You know, we got a divorce decree, and maybe, I don't know if they'll accept that or not.
I would think so. You can't get a divorce decree unless you're married.
Yeah. Well,
right?
Try that.
Yeah. Now you're
not one of the documents listed.
Well, you know, and that's the thing, is a lot of times you can't have a comprehensive list, because there could be any host of things you just can't think of. So, yeah, I would definitely run that up the flagpole and see where you got, and then call us back, because you may not be the only guy who has the situation. Let us know if that worked out for you, okay?
Yeah, I'll do that.
All right, Jerry. Appreciate it. All right, we got to take our break here at the bottom of the hour. You are listening to AOL. Again, any questions or comments, feel free to give us a call at 447-5743. That's 447-5743. All right, welcome back. You are listening to AOL. We got our special guest, Liberal Ron, on line one. Ron, how you doing this Happy New Year?
Doing okay, Kyle.
Yeah? How excited are you that we took out a mass murderer, a terrorist of the highest degree? Does that feel make you feel more safe and secure now?
Well, it looks like we might be headed to war in the Middle East.
I don't know. I don't know that. But I know we took out a bad guy. You agree with that, right? He was a bad guy?
He's our enemy.
Yeah. So what do you got for us, Ron?
Well, this guy you're talking about is one of the top guys in Iran.
Soleimani, yeah.
So that's basically a declaration of war.
Well, hasn't Iran already done that with us? I mean, how many U.S. soldiers, how many U.S. citizens have been captured by Iran and killed? Would that be not be an act of war?
Well, I think we invaded the Middle East. We're in their territory.
We're not in Iran's territory, are we? I believe Saudi Arabia has invited us, right? Iraq has asked us to stay. Kuwait wants us there. So I don't know if you can call that an invasion, brother. You know what the Nazis did? What the Nazis did to Poland, to Hungary, to France, right? I think that is what you would call an invasion. Are you really describing what the United States has done is similar to what that of Hitler's Nazi Germany did?
I was always afraid of the war in the Middle East. Because all my life I was taught about Armageddon.
Yeah.
That would be the final war. It'd be drenched in blood and all that stuff.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right, Ron. Absolutely right.
I always feared, Kyle, invading the Middle East and starting a war. Because I was, like, taught all about Armageddon and all that. And we're on the brink of war in the Middle East.
Yeah, I think that's been true for a long time, brother. I really do, and I think these events are inevitable because, like you said, the good book had forecasted this thousands of years ahead of time.
So, are you happy about the impending war, the bloodbath?
Well, if it's God's will, then that's what's going to happen. But I don't believe we're heading that way, not yet, at least.
Then we blame God. Of course, God's on everyone's side.
Yeah. Well, our God is. I don't know about Iran. They have a false God.
Your God. God. One of the gods. Who knows, Kyle? Yeah.
But, brother, you have to understand that the Middle East has been in turmoil for decades, right? Long before the United States ever got involved. Long before.
Why did we invade the Middle East on a false pretense?
Oh, you're talking about Bush now, right?
Well, why do we attack Iran? They had nothing to do with 9/11.
We didn't attack Iran. Do you know something I don't?
Sorry, I meant Iraq.
Yes. Hey, you and Trump would be in agreement, right? Remember in 16, Trump, Blaine Bush, said that he took us to a war on false pretenses. So you and Trump have something to agree on for once, right?
That's right, because Trump, I've seen him interviewed, and he thinks the buildings were blown up on 9/11. So do I. I think 9/11's a lie.
I don't know. You know, Ron, and I'll be honest with you, Ron. I'm not one of those conspiracy theorist stuff, but I think there are questions. I think there definitely are questions. I do believe that planes were flown into the Twin Towers. I don't think you can fake that. I've seen those little things about missiles and stuff. But the Pentagon, that's where I'm really more questionable on, is that one just doesn't make a whole lot of sense because I have yet to hear anyone find any evidence of a airplane remnants inside of the Pentagon.
Well,
I just haven't.
We agree. a lie.
It could be. I don't know. I think our government, hey, you know what we have learned since Trump has become president? Is it that the government is capable of anything. I bet before 2016, you would have said it's impossible for the government to get a warrant on false pretenses to spy on a political opponent. But that's what the Obama administration did, didn't they? They got a FISA warrant based on false evidence and was able to spy on the Trump campaign. If the government's able to do that, then I guess the government's really able to do almost anything.
Kyle, there's all kinds of evidence against Trump.
No, not that time. They made up phony evidence. Even the FISA court, read their response to what the IG Inspector General found out, that it was based on a lie. The government officials lied to the FISA court.
Trump tried to coerce the president of Ukraine.
Oh, God, get off of that. That had nothing to do. That was long before that. The FISA court incident happened long before President Trump ever became president.
If they allow a trial, then you'll see.
No. You had your trial. Now, with the House, you remember Nancy Pelosi said it is imperative. Imperative that we get this impeachment done right now. But then they get it, and they don't ever turn it over to the Senate. It can wait. It can wait.
Well, there was lots of credible witnesses against Trump.
Wow.
You just disregard that.
Yeah, I do. It's all based on hearsay, and hearsay will never help you in court. And I would hope, Ron, that you would not want to be convicted on somebody saying, well, somebody told me that Ron said this. So, but we got to take our break here, Ron. Sorry, buddy. She's giving me the finger. All right, you are listening to AOL. We got our last break here. If you got any last-minute questions or comments, feel free to call here in studio at 447-5743. That's 447-5743. All right, welcome back. You are listening to AOL. God, I love these guys. Oh, the 80s were good. The 80s were good. I love them. Hey, we had a call in during the break with a quick question about expungement on a DWI. How long do you have to wait? And in Missouri, you can only expunge your first DWI, and it has to be predicated on the fact that you have not received another DWI, okay? And you have to wait 10 years. 10 years to have that expunged. So it is a process. We have to serve a summons on a whole host of organizations. Last one I did, served the Greene County Prosecutor's Office, served the Greene County Sheriff, or served the Highway Patrol, served depository information, served the Highway Patrol, served the Missouri Department of Revenue, served the Circuit Clerk of Greene County, just on and on and on. Got to put everybody on notice. Everybody on notice that you are wanting to do an expungement to have that DWI lifted off your record. I had a guy, he got one like over 20-some-odd years ago, and I go, why now? Why are you worried about it now? And he goes, well, I got grandkids, and everything is, you know, public record anymore, and I'm just embarrassed by it. It was in a different time in my life, and it's just not who I am now, and I want it gone. And he, of course, didn't have any other subsequent offenses, DWI offenses, that is. We were able to do that for him. It does take a little while. Like I said, it's a process, but it can be completed. And if you are in that category and want to see about doing an expungement, feel free to give us a call at our office, 831-3200, or you can just Google us. We're easy to find. But that was a very good question. We've talked about expungements in the past. The law changed a couple of years ago about allowing other offenses to be expunged from your record. And we can probably visit that topic again sometime this year. But, it is somewhat negative. I can see that, having that in your past. But the way I talk about it, I mean, everybody makes mistakes. Imagine the things that you do or you did in your 20s that in no way you would ever think about doing now. right? I can never imagine myself getting in a truck now at 44 years of age and go yard farming. I don't know if you, Sarah, have you ever gone yard farming? Do you even know what that is? It's a hick thing. You should know. You should know. Where you get a truck and drive through people's yards and kick out sod and good stuff like that. Text in. What about what SID admin on your license forever? What about what? You don't know? That was a text. You were just writing me the text. What about? All right. Well, first off, when you do get stopped for suspicion of driving while intoxicated and you do lose your license for that 90 days, on your driver's license, in black and white, it'll state that you received an alcohol-related suspension. Okay? An alcohol-related suspension. Now, we may be successful in keeping the DWI off your criminal record. Your first time, okay? There are ways to keep it off your criminal record. We can get what you call like a suspended imposition of sentence, an SIS probation. All right, so it's not going to be on your criminal record. You can honestly state on a job application or loan application, have you been convicted of a driving while intoxicated? You can answer no, because an SIS probation is a non-conviction. All right, the court accepts your plea of guilt, but does not sentence you. If there's no sentence, there's no conviction. Yada, yada, yada. But on your driving record, you'll show that alcohol-related suspension. And so, you know, the text in, I'll have to check on that, on the expungement aspect of it. Does it apply even to that? All right. I know as far as any criminal record and on your driving record, those things would be expunged that you had a DWI, right? The 8-point violation. I do need to check on that, on the expungement part, if that also applies to the alcohol-related suspension. Because you can get an alcohol-related suspension and not have a conviction. You know, like I said, one has absolutely nothing to do with the other. So we will check on that, and I will answer that question next week. Sarah's going to have to remind me. I do tend to get busy during the week. I got a trial on Monday. Another text in. We got like, people texting in today, huh? Is there such thing as grandparent visitation rights? Absolutely. Absolutely. Under Missouri law, there is a specific statute that addresses grandparent visitation rights. But as like anything under the law, there's always exceptions. There's always rules. Okay. One of the most daunting exception to the visitation rights is if mom and dad are currently married and don't want you to see the grandkids, you have absolutely no standing, none, to file a petition with the court to give visitation rights. However, if mom and dad are no longer together and you are being denied visitation, then for a period of time, and if you want specific details, you can make an appointment with our office, but there's a time frame on how long you have been denied contact before you can initiate a petition for grandparent visitation rights. But if you meet those criterias, then absolutely you can file a petition for grandparent visitation. We do a number of those each year. But understand this. Under the statute and case law, in regards to grandparent visitation rights, the law states that it has to be minimally intrusive, okay? Meaning that you're not going to be able to get the visitation rights that a parent normally gets. You know, if you were to get divorced, you have parenting plans that are, what, 50-50? You can have some that are really strict as far as just every other weekend, all right? Well, even every other weekend would not meet the minimally intrusive component of the law. And say that's a little bit too much or too intrusive. But it's always a case-by-case analysis for the judge. You know, if you have a situation where one of the parents is deceased, then you may find that grandparent getting a little bit more time than another grandparent would, okay? And that's the other thing that you have to keep in mind is if you know, the courts would expect that your child will make your grandchildren available. But there's always, you know, reasons why that can't be, you know, whether or not your child is not allowed to have visitation because they have drug issues or criminal issues, or they're in prison, or they have abandoned a child. You know, there's any host of things. But if you're interested in looking into that, again, make an appointment with our office. We'll be happy to sit down and talk with you and see if there is hope or help that can be given. I wanted to close the show with, you know, just some disturbing, sad news. Most of you know, have heard of Judge Holden, Calvin Holden. He's been a circuit court judge here in Grant County for many years. His wife, Judge Palmieto, is also a judge here in Grant County. She's an associate circuit court judge. And over New Year's Eve, their son, Alex Holden, has gone missing, last seen on New Year's Eve at 2:30 a.m. in Sacramento, California. So be sure tomorrow when you're issuing out prayers at church that you you lift up that family and hope that they find their son. But that is our show for the week. Hope every one of you have a happy weekend and a great new 2020 year. We will catch you next Saturday at 9.